Yeah. Okay, so while Hadriel's busy getting dressed there with the microphone, which he hasn't got in his hand yet, two comments from the chair. First of all, status of the current work. While we've been posting notes from this discussion on the list, it isn't actually an official activity, but it has been open, so people should have been aware of the conference call discussions that have been taking place on identity. The other thing is, what are we actually trying to achieve today? Well, there's obviously a problem somewhere, because people have written N number of drafts on this subject over the last 2 years. So basically what we're trying to do is concentrate on what is the bit of the problem that we can agree on is a problem that we actually want to solve. So over to you, Hadriel.
Right. I am John Elwell, representing the DRET. See, an identity problem right there. So, as you guys know, we've been debating this for a long time. We have RFC 4474 and 4496, or whatever the connected identity one is. Next slide. This is, unfortunately, the state of identity right now. We keep trying to kick the ball, but it keeps getting pulled from us. And you can debate who Lucy is. It could be the SBCs. It could be some other people. But anyway, next slide. So what are we trying to achieve? Essentially, the ability for a participant, both the session creator and the session receiver, to know with a high degree of certainty who the other party is. By the way, if I'm too loud in the microphone, just let me know. I don't want to cause any headaches. I know I have a loud voice. So, and then a second piece that we're trying to achieve, although it may be unachievable through this mechanism alone, is that the information, the ultimate communication at the media plane, is being sent to and received from that other party. So effectively, we're trying to get end-to-end authenticated identification. And of course, we have that last bullet point, which is to work in a large number of practical deployments today.
Yes, Steve Norris again. I would like to go up a layer. In this and saying, why is this information being passed? And if you understand the rationale for actually sending the information from A to B, then you can start to think about the mechanisms for doing so. At this moment in time, there's an assumption that it's going to be, is it going to be used for presentation? Is it going to be used for other purposes? Is it going to be used to return stuff and so on and so forth? It's not, it'd be interesting to know. Let's go up a higher step, but to a much higher level about
requirements. From the user's perspective, why would they want this? Or yeah. Do you mean why do we need this to work in deployments?
Why would we want it?
And it's then actually two different answers to that question. Do you want me to answer it now, or do you want me to?
No. I'm thinking of, because identity tries to do too many. I think the problem with identity, it's been a problem ever since I've been in signaling, that identity tries to do too many things.
I agree.
And if we could actually understand what identity is trying to do and why you need it, then we might think, oh, right, let's just do a number of different identities, and they could all be used for different purposes.
I agree. I'm not actually sure that we all agree on what it can be used for or what it should be used for, what it can provide to us. Personally, and just speaking as one of the people on, there were plenty of people on the conference calls, for me, it's all about caller ID. And that's all it's about. Everything else is second order, beyond that. And so it's essentially to stop effectively spams, spoofers, Fisher type of situations. I don't believe everybody has that requirement, in terms of SIP, clearly we had other uses for it, protecting specific body types. Let's even ignore SDP in a message method, for example, just like email, where the content literally is in the message. It was quite good to sign that text body to say, yeah, this is really the text that was sent. Personally, I find that only protects against man in the middles, which honestly I'm not sure that people really care as much about as opposed to unknown ends. But there are multiple camps of why people want this. I don't agree. John?
Yeah, John Elwell. Yeah, to address Steve's good question, I think, it is caller ID, but that caller ID can be used for a multiplicity of purposes. And one is simply for display, and as a result of the display, the user might make a decision whether to answer that call or how to answer that call, what greeting to give or something like that. It might impact what is displayed. Do you give account details for that customer or something like that? It might it might affect automated handling of that call, such as whether to forward to voicemail, whether to reject.
That's all caller ID, essentially, is what you're talking
about. Yeah, so it's
caller
ID
to, like, protecting
can lead to all
of
these things. I think
bodies,
the draft discusses some of these bodies. Things. Well, we could certainly add more discussion to the draft, but we didn't have time in this presentation to go into all that.
Lucy here. Just wanted to put in the order that I do think that one of the problems that we have, or one of the reasons why we have such trouble understanding this, because we really don't understand what kind of authorization decisions we expect are going to be made on the basis of this, or at least I don't think we agree on them. And, you know, this is something 4474 never really got into, right? I mean, we punted on the notion of, okay, if you got this signature and it's good, what does that really let you do?
Right.
You know,
right.
Okay, good, you've got that, great. Now what?
Right.
And we didn't answer it.
Right, so I think I may just want to nitpick the slide a tiny bit, when you say communication, you know, that there's more to this than authenticating a media stream. And, you know, that if you're getting, you know, if you're receiving messages that are control messages, those need to be authenticated as well. That's another, that seems to be a related objective.
Okay.
Okay. If you don't disagree with that, that's fine.
Not at all.
Like a buy, yeah, exactly, like a buy.
What, like what?
Like a buy, for instance. It's important. It's important to verify if you see a buy as part of a communication that came from the person you're talking to, as it is to verify that the sound that you're hearing came from the person you think you're talking to.
That may be important for you. It's not for me at all.
I
believe the call ID and tags provide enough randomization that you can assume that only a man in the middle that was already in the middle of the call could have sent that by. And,
well, if we're ruling out active attack as a threat model, then the situation's
got
a lot easier.
Unfortunately, actually, that's actually one of the contentious points, right? Honestly, that is, in fact, one of the contentious points from my perspective, not speaking as John or the other people who wrote this, but, people don't care about man in the middle for these situations, because if there's a man in the middle active attack, this is like the least of your problems. You are so toast. It's like, this is almost a joke in the problems.
Forging a buy is not a man in the middle who is intercepting your traffic and then, you know, spitting out the other side. This is an eavesdropper who is merely injecting and forging requests. He doesn't have to block any requests in order to do that.
Sure.
So, I mean, this is not, yes, I agree. If you've got a guy who literally is in the path of all of your communications, you have much more serious problems and identity will not help you.
Yes.
But this is a different situation. It's forging a buy.
Sure. Any other questions on this slide? Next. So, what is the problem that is preventing 4474? As we know, BWAs modify signed parts of the request. They modify SDP for media steering, or for transcoding, or for about a bunch of other reasons, to make offerless pracs work out right.
Before we jump into this, I'm curious about the this part, and this goes back to Steve's question here of what is the problem we're trying to solve? And I've asked this at every single meeting where this has come up, and I've said that I thought we needed to get to some common understanding what the problem was. And I just heard the authors basically say between themselves, we have no agreement on what the problem is we're trying to solve here. There's lots of different problems. So what is the this that 4474 breaks?
For me, it's what is preventing us from using 44. Well, this slide is what is preventing us from using 4474.
The what breaks 44?
That's it. Just this slide is about what is preventing us from using 4474 today.
What?
Just using, literally using 4474, the mechanism in 4474.
For what?
For anything. For whatever we believe it was intended for. For either providing caller identity proof, or providing body integrity, or providing buy authentication, or whatever reasons you may think you want to use 4474 for, we're arguing here's why you can't use it. Oh, sorry, my volume is increasing. You know.
So let me make sure that I understand the form of your argument. We can't use 4474 because 4474 can't be used, and the reason we can't use 4474 is because it doesn't work for 4474. I don't.
What?
I mean, I'm. Yeah, that's exactly. What?
No. You have a. Look, there's a tool today, right? SIP working group, all of us worked on a tool that is supposed to be usable for a whole bunch of reasons. Each of us have different reasons why we want to use that tool, and we're saying
sure.
The tool is not usable for the following reasons.
Can I just answer Colin's question? The this there is refers to the previous slide, the thing that the user is trying to achieve. So what is preventing the user achieving that?
Which list are we talking about anyway?
The one in the
title. Oh. So, but I think that that's the highlight of this. I didn't get the feeling we had consensus on what the problem was on the previous slide in any sense of the word. So, it made it hard for me to try and figure out what hunger. I mean, if the this is defined as adding useless extra bandwidth to your message, I mean, it clearly worked. Right? So, it's hard to have this discussion without getting into the this.
For the people who are on the conference call, do you mind describing this as for the caller identity, which is basically the first bullet point, caller and calling identity? So I don't want to speak for everybody who was on the conference calls. Would you guys be okay with it? That's the way I interpreted the first bullet slide. I know.
In the Jabber room,
in which case that is my
Hadrian.
Oh, yep.
Dan York in the Jabber room, he's saying that caller identity is the main point.
Caller ID, the from, or whatever it is that we display as the source of the invite or initial dialogue creating request, and potentially an update coming the other way for call it identity. That's the, I mean, in terms of what market wants, market demands, that's what they seem to want, from my opinion. I think all of us live in a different area for that, but.
I want to talk about the next slide. So if you're talking about this slide, then, okay. If you guys want to talk about the previous slide, then I'll wait. Oh, okay.
So what I heard some people on the conference call said, and I was on a few of the conference calls, was that they were interested in knowing who they were going to be talking to when they answered the call, and that was the initial problem when the call started ringing, and that was the problem they were interested in. And clearly everybody had very different things that they were interested in. In fact, Adriel, I believe you explicitly disagreed with that as the problem.
No. I believe that the media plane part I thought was I disagreed with, but yes.
Understood. So you agree with me, you disagree with that characterization of knowing who you'd be talking to when you answered the call.
It's funny because when you say, when you know who you're going to be talking to, I think that can be read in different ways, but sure. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry, say that one more time.
It doesn't matter.
Do the authors of the draft agree what I just said was one of the problems we're trying to solve? I guess it'd be a question. You know who you'll be talking to when you answer the call. That's one of the problems we'd like to solve.
I believe that is one of the problems that people would like to solve. Yes, that is one of the problems. We're gonna run out of time on this session. And I think the goal of this was actually to see if we need to, like a dispatch model, right, was to see whether we needed to spin a BOF, I guess, or whether this belongs in any specific about-to-be-created working group out of the reorganization model.
Can I come back on Cullen a bit there? Because what we need to discuss, are you actually trying to get hold of a person or the equipment that person owns? Because actually, if you can say that I'm actually talking to that person, I'm not quite sure how you do that in Signaling.
Right,
to be
and that's
quite
my
honest.
Problem with this whole thing is it gets to some human layer that is virtually impossible to provide. I don't know how to provide that type of thing. But you know, there's different layers of where at a protocol layer you can talk about identity, and then there's obviously humans, which no protocol can verify. But
sorry, next slide.
Is this going to address the should we go spin it to a BOF?
No. My
problem is that we'll just keep, I mean, we're taking up a lot of time here. We're going to be cut off, and I really want to get the answer. The answer is not how to solve this or what even necessarily what the full problem is. More of the where does this belong, I think. From a dispatch model, to me, that is what the dispatch model is supposed to be about.
Well,
I believe. It's not a requirements discussion. It's not a solution discussion.
My understanding was that part of the dispatch model was validating whether this was something that was worth considering in any way. I mean, surely if I stood up and said, you know, that my presentation is about, you know, using SIP to explode the world with hydrogen bombs, that probably wouldn't get a bot for that, right?
Okay.
So I really we're spending more time arguing this meta point than I'm going to say.
Sure.
So can I just see the next slide?
Go ahead. Sorry.
Can I see the next slide?
The next slide.
You ready for the next one?
The next slide actually has already been shown.
Right. So I think we want to observe the word intermediate here is doing a lot of work. That this what you're about to talk about with B2B ways breaking the signature, right? There's a really important distinction between BW is in the same trust domain as the endpoints, and BW is outside the trust domain. And that in one case, it's an administrative engineering problem. In another case, it's an actual technical problem. So,
I don't know, but it'll be an MP3, and I can play it slowly.
Okay, so Hadriel's about to say that the reason 4474 doesn't work is because the BWA has changed things and it breaks the signature, right? And the response that is regularly proffered to this is let the BWAs resign. And what blocks him from doing that is one of two things. Either it's inconvenient because you just don't want to give them the keys, or they're outside the trust domain of the original originating UA. And so I'm just pointing out that the word intermediate here is doing a lot of work, and that it's conflating those two issues, and they're not the same at all.
So interestingly, I think they believe they're in the same trust domain, but they're not in the same domain. They're literally different domains. They just happen to trust each other. So the UA is sending it to its proxy that signs this thing in domain A. It trusts domain B that it sends to as a transit domain, and that domain changes this stuff, but clearly doesn't have the keys of domain A because it's a completely different domain under administratively different control. But they trust each other to do that stuff. Meanwhile, B then sends it to C, who it trusts, hop by hop trust.
Right. You're using trust domain in a different sense of the term. I would use it. How about we say an administrative domain?
Ah, yes, right. Clearly, it is in a different administrative domain. But it isn't, ironically, I believe, in the same domain of trust from a 3325 perspective or something of that model. Trust, spec T. They believe they are in the same spec T. Because the whole point is that it's not actually. Oh, sorry.
So the question is, why would C not trust B's signature on an identity coming from A?
Yeah, and that was, I think, Cullen's point a long time ago. What's that?
Yes. I don't want to jump in line, so I have a comment on that. But.
Yeah. Let me relay first. Dan York from the Jabba room again. What we are trying to get the identity of the endpoint. Emphasis. I want to know that it's indeed someone at my bank calling me. Obviously, if a burglar breaks into my bank and then calls me from the bank's phone, that's a different issue. So, Andrew.
Yeah, well, I want to address this slide as well. So, at least on some of these items that you say why back-to-back UAs are actually going and breaking the signature, and the signature's there for other reasons, right, not just for identity, but to make sure a man in the middle doesn't actually modify some of these things. And we have an SBC in the way that then goes and breaks that signature and modifies it. We've done a lot of work on session policy to address the first bullet. You yourself are coming with proposals to try to address at least the call ID. I think we should consider whether we should address some of the issues that back-to-back user agents are trying to solve, the reasons why they're modifying some of these things, so we don't have to break the signature, rather than just go off and do some new work. I think that we ought to consider whether we can fix some of the issues that mean we have to break the signature.
Okay. Have you been following the discussion on the list at all? There's too many emails, unfortunately, on it. I think maybe we need to capture that. It's a good comment. We need to capture that in a document because we've discussed that as well. If we don't have it in one of the 30 drafts on this topic, we should add it into one of them.
So,
it's
Andrew,
it's a good question, but we haven't an answer.
Can you post that to the list then, Andrew, please?
Yeah. The question was, the purpose of signing this stuff was to prevent people in the middle from changing them. I actually debate that actually as a premise, but whatever. I think it's to prove that, in fact, you generated the request, not that somebody in the middle didn't change the request. But regardless.
They're the same thing, yes.
Well, no, for somebody in the middle to change the request requires you to have actually generated. But it doesn't matter. The comment was, if we're signing it to protect them from being changed and something's changing it, that's just proving that we've verified something's changing it, and it's basically bogus to do so, and we should in fact go and try to fix why things are changing things in the middle instead of trying to not sign that stuff. Okay. That's the comment. Oh, okay. Did you get that part? His last part was, we're already doing work in SIP to try to address the middle devices changing stuff.
Yuri Kutan, just a comment on the modify SDP, and RFC 4474. The thing is, if you look in the field, actually calls which don't have modified SDPs are a rare exception, period. Changing SDP is in the field the rule. That's a common case. It's a mainstream. And the only thing we could do with RFC 4474 is to hope that there is no SDP changing equipment between the identity producing and the identity consuming elements, and I don't think we can grant it that. I think actually that mandating such a sort of integrity protection for SDP is certainly well meant, and I understand the noble motivation for that, but it's not just flying in the field, period. It just doesn't work. And it's not one more comment, actually. It's not B2B, back-to-back user agent specific stuff. We've got, for years, we have been building and using and deploying proxy servers, and they change SDPs too. You may possibly not call them proxy servers.
Right.
You can call them foobar SDP changing proxy like animals, but they still change SDP because we need to get over NATs. That's what it do, what it does.
Okay, now we're going to get Hadriel to finish the slides, and then we will get all your comments. Okay?
Bastard.
Okay.
The truth is, we're not going to come to a conclusion today.
There will be no consensus on this. I agree. The consensus, I believe,
and correct me if I'm wrong, John, I believe the consensus we need to reach here is not about is this the right solution?
Hadriel. What I said is like, we're going to get Hadriel to finish the slides, and then let's keep on this.
Next slide. I thought that would happen. Next slide. So, we believe the solution requirements are that the tolerance of intermediate domains changing the IP address and port in SDP should be allowed, that we should tolerate such things. Or at least we believe that's a yes. Tolerance of intermediate domains changing the contact, address spec, call ID, and C sequence header fields, maybe, we're not sure. And then the tolerance of intermediate domains changing domain part of from and to header fields and for E164 based, which effectively are Telluride and SIP clothing. And then tolerance of intermediate domains changing user part of from and to header field URIs. We definitely do not believe that that should be allowed because ultimately that is, in fact, what is being proven for identity. Next slide. And so the real question here that we need to understand is, should we be working on this problem space? And if so, what are the next next steps? Do we go to create a both, or we keep presenting this at every IETF for the future?
François, can you go back to your previous slide? Yeah, that's the interesting one. I must say that I'm having a little bit of a groundhog day today. I think we've had this meeting before. But so I don't think we're going to get agreement on these requirements. I don't believe that there is necessarily a need for the intermediate domains to change these things. I mean, arguing that if an enterprise A calls enterprise B and you need an SBC for NAT traversal or whatever, then they should be located in a terminating domain and possibly the originating one as well. And I think that solves the problem, really, and there's no problem, effectively.
So you don't believe that an enterprise will call another enterprise through a middle domain that speaks SIP?
I don't believe that the middle domain should necessarily be allowed to modify these fields. If the domain is the service provider,
yes,
then that's fine. It works too. But I don't see why the intermediate domain needs to supposedly fix stuff, which apparently is not fixing that much. It's mostly breaking stuff when the originating and determining domains are adults. So I don't think we agree on this.
Just as a focus point, the idea of this slide was that is there anything of any of these points that people actually want to break off and say, let's do this one? So if you can focus on that. I don't think we're quite at that point yet,
but
that was the idea of this slide. Can we take any one, two, three, or four of these and do them?
Okay, so I don't agree with the first one. I don't agree with any one of them.
Any of these.
Except your last one where you said no. But
thanks. Lucy here again. I do understand that there is, I think, a real disagreement here in this room, and it's been in this room for the last couple of years, about this first one and about the validity of these media steering cases. Now, what I wanted to get up and say a couple of minutes ago is I've gone on record many times is saying if there is some cryptographic way that we can know who in domain B made this change in the case where it's going from A to B, if what B does leaves a trace that can be verified and authorized by other people, then I think there is an acceptable path to do this. If the actions of this guy are indistinguishable from those of attackers, then this is madness. And this is a fundamental disagreement in our approach to this.
Yeah.
Right? And I mean,
correct.
So until we can resolve that, I have no idea how we can even talk about number one. I mean, I don't even know how to explain this to security people. When I even bring this up, they just look at me cross-eyed. So, I mean, it's what are you talking about that there's going to be this? Actions are indistinguishable from this. There are plenty of ways we could approach this where it's not. If those were acceptable in the solution space to anyone who wants to be able to do media steering, this discussion would be over, right? But it's not acceptable. So, I mean, that's the problem. Let me speak as well to 2 and 3. So on 2 and 3, 3 is the one I'm most sympathetic to be honest. I think we definitely need to capture this stuff. I think some text has been written that captures the problems with this already. And there could be some solutions based to this. I don't know. In 2, I think I'm more optimistic about the contact header than you guys are from what I've read in the draft. And I need to send notes about this. I think there still are cases where I really think we want to keep the contact header because it's a device identifier that is relied on for other functions, and you mediate too much when you remove it. But I also want to commend your looking at, you know, things like call ID and trying to figure out how we can fix call ID so that it does not rely on this. And this speaks to Andrew Allen's point, I think, right? That we did have originally a bunch of charter items that were intended, like GRU and session policy. I know a bunch of our success stories here, right? But, you know, a bunch of things that were intended to have these functions not need to occur unilaterally at an intermediary. I think we went down that path. I think we're way past the point where realistically we can try to resolve this way now. Little things like call ID or maybe even contact, maybe. But so if there's a solution space here for that, I think it would be in those things, somewhere in 2 and 3. 1, I just give up on.
Okay, we have run out of time, so I'm closing the lines. And please, no, I mean, you can still, but anyway, be concise, please.
Right, so I'm sort of security guys, so I'm going back to first principles here. The security tools we have are exceptionally primitive. Cryptographic security tools we have are exceptionally primitive. They permit you to do effectively only one thing, which is to bind a certain section of text to an identity who transmitted it. They don't permit fuzziness. They don't permit anything like that.
Right.
They permit you to exclude things. Right. So
it's very black and white. Yeah.
So to the extent to which you're able to make expressions about something, it's not a meaningful statement to say, I received a message from Hadriel, but I don't know what it says. That's not a meaningful statement in any security paradigm we have now. We are allowed to say the following things. I received the following text from Hadriel. I may have received some other text, which I have no idea where it came from. And you might even be able to say, under the right circumstances, I received Hadriel sent X, but it was modified to say Y by some other guy. If you're talking about what John is talking about. So given that tool chain, effectively the only things we can do are to remove things from purview, that is by not signing them at all, which is the path that many people have been going down, or to allow you to reconstruct what the original content was in a way to verify it. So that's the only tooling we have. And so the concept of separating data origin authentication from message integrity simply is not a concept.
Do you believe that SDP is human text that people generated, like by typing or something? I mean, honestly, like
no.
SDP to me is almost the equivalent of headers in a body at this point.
No, I'm sorry.
So there are lots of headers that we don't sign.
I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to make a statement about what one ought to or not do. I'm saying this is what the tool chain allows us to do, and so.
Yes, yes.
So I mean. Those are the options, and it's simply all the only things we can do. And so there's no notion of trying to separate data origin authentication from integrity. It's not possible given the tool chain.
Agreed, but there is a possibility of separating out specifically to be signed pieces of the mind body attachment.
Absolutely.
Right.
But the only thing that gives you is that you end up saying that I have certainty that Hadriel said X, and everything else could have been generated by the most evil person.
Correct. Absolutely. There's no debate that is exactly what it allows.
Right. And so the extent to which those things are sensitive. So I mean, so basically, that requires dividing the universe into things that are sensitive and things that are not, and nothing that is sensitive can be allowed to be touched by Satan.
Agreed. Then exactly, and so the debate boils down to: is an IP address in the SDP sensitive, or is an IP address not itself secure in any way? Anyway, and really, you need a fingerprint or a password or something else that is sensitive that should be signed, but not an IP address.
That's exactly the question for every single one of these values, right?
Right.
1 minute.
Okay, Andrew Allen. I think based on my previous comment, you got my views, at least on the first couple of bullets. I think we should try to solve those issues. These things break other things, not just identity. It's a bigger question there. Follow on to what John says. So basically, an SBC modifying these things looks the same as a man in the middle attack, unless you trust that SBC, unless you have transitive trust. If you have transitive trust, we have a solution. It's called pre-asserted identity, and we use that. So, you know, you can't tell. If you're actually going outside the trust domain, you cannot tell whether that SBC is doing something legitimate or whether it's some man in the middle attack out in the internet somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, okay.
Robert, are you waiting for the mic, or are you just hanging back there? So right.
Can we get a hum on whether they think...
Well, I think what the first one I want to do is a first checkpoint, which is lots of people are saying there is a problem to be solved. How many people in the room think there is not any problem to be solved, and therefore we're all basically wasting our time by progressing this discussion? So how many people in the room think there is not a problem to be solved anywhere in this space in the IETF?
Andrew Allen again. What happened to what Jonathan was working on a while back, which was trying to make identity and pre-asserted identity work together? Because I think that was maybe more of a solvable problem than trying to actually solve the end-to-end thing.
Doesn't solve anything in this space.
Well, if you can actually have identity work with pre-asserted identity, then the people that want to go modify SDP and stuff in the transitive trust domains are doing that. And pre-asserted identity works in those situations.
Yeah, we're not reopening the mic anyway, but what I want to know is, you know, is there point in continuing this discussion beyond this meeting and trying to involve more people in it, or are we just wasting our time because there is nothing to solve?
Right, we don't want to continue hashing this forever if there's no point in it. So.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, the problem is, as John said, there's a fundamental disconnect between, you know, people in group A and people in group B about what are legitimate modifications of this data set. And, to the extent to which, and you're hearing that now, for even the simplest cases. So, you know, I don't think that until there's some consensus on that point, it's very hard to see any technical solution proceeding, given that the technical solutions, as I said earlier, are so extraordinarily primitive.
Okay, so that's a good point to go ahead and bring on the list. Guys, we're eating into our discussion of the restructuring right now, that time, okay? Your choice. Okay.
François speaking. So I think there obviously is a problem. I think the problem, but the issue that we're having is we're characterizing the problem differently. I'm sensing that what you're really trying to do is some sort of identity that's not end-to-end. Trying to get some assertion of the identity, but it's not end-to-end.
Okay.
No. It is, because you have this guy in the middle that is actually deciding.
Okay.
So maybe that is the topic you're trying to do. It's an end-to-middle security thing.
Okay, but
that's
guys, come on. I mean, there's been, you know, biweekly conference calls and all this. This is where some of these discussions should be happening, right?
Right. And to me, the nice thing about the reorganization is we can have a BOF. We can split out group A from group B, and the group B can go work on what they want to work on, and group A can leave them alone. I mean,
my point is that if you're... my point is that...
That's not what dispatch is going to help.
So, Adriel, trying to pretend that this is an end-to-end security is hurting you, because all the guys who actually understand this keep saying this is not end-to-end, it's not end-to-end and identity. So, and if it's not, then bring in the requirement why we need something else. And I think there's probably a good point to be made that an intermediated type thing is required. And, you know, the solution may look different. It may not look like 4474, and it may look more like, I don't know, some sort of pre-asserted identity.
Okay,
I don't know.
Thank you. Yeah. Jonathan, and then we're...
So at this point, I don't think it's not worth further pursuing this until there's actually a proposal on the table which satisfies two requirements. One is that the folks, you know, folks can demonstrate that it doesn't have this property John is worried about and Colin is worried about, that, you know, an attacker themselves can do the same manipulations and pass the signature, and that it also works through SBCs. And we don't have such a proposal. I mean, at the end of the day,
We have had three proposals that satisfy those requirements.
I think the problem is they have not... Well, I think there's no agreement that it, in fact...
Well, the fundamental disconnect, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jim, but I believe it is that he literally believes the IP address in the SDP should not be changed by a guy in the middle. Whereas we're saying the IP address is not an identity.
It's not. Okay, whatever. My main point was this.
It's not worth proceeding
because at this point, because I don't see that we have even remotely consensus on any solution.
Okay, so we want to drop this. You're suggesting we drop this discussion altogether,
Dispatch
guys?
Is not to come up with a consensus on solution. Am I incorrect? I thought it was to discuss whether something should go into
I guess there's a question of whether there's demonstrable proof that there's actually a solution that meets the requirements. That's the...
Okay. John, are you going to say something, or are we done? So I don't
know.
In
the interest of time, I'll sit down. But.
Okay. Yeah. Well, which question do we want to ask? Whether or not people think there's any interest in working on this at all?
If we're going to take a hum that's any interest in working on these things, then I'm going to get back up to the mic, because come on.
Guys.
Okay, the question is, as Keith said before, is there any point in employing more IETF time on this topic? And I'm going to be asking yes or no. Is it clear enough? No, I don't want clarification. Okay.
And I'm going to put in some clarification. If you're going to take that home, say pursuing this topic in the way that it is currently being pursued.
Yes.
Do you think, would it be reasonable to ask if people here in the room think we've got a workable solution for providing identity?
I mean, we can start debating here 3 hours if you want, but what I want is to really tell Hadrill if it's worthwhile, you know, going on with this, or he has to basically rethink his approach and you
or,
know.
Or just not stop talking about it. We can stop talking about it. It's not like...
So...
devoting resources already to doing this.
Exactly.
Do we stop devoting those resources or not?
So who thinks we should be employing more time on this topic as currently presented? Please, Ham. Who thinks it's a waste of time and we should not employ any more resources on this as currently presented? Please, Ham. Okay.
Half and half.
That's
Group A and Group B are for you.
All right. I would like to ask a separate question.
Can you guys make a consensus call on that?
What was the
question? That hum, we couldn't tell what happened.
Yes. So there's no clear conclusion on that hum. It's slightly heavier in one flavor, but not completely decisive. Therefore, I would like to ask a different question, and that is there a point in attempting to work on the identity problem at all in IETF? Not as currently presented, but at all. Do we wish to have further discussion of the identity problem, or just give it up as unsolvable for now? So, those in favor of having further discussion on the identity problem in general, hum. Those in favor of abandoning all discussion of the identity problem until something dramatically changes, hum. Okay. So we think identity is worth working on somewhere, somehow. What's your question, Robert?
Did you really expect anyone in this room to hum for that second question? It's okay. It didn't do any harm to ask it, but...
I thought we might get some takers.
So as I'm wrapping my head around how to help the conversation progress, I would strongly encourage all of the participants to figure out a different set of problems, a different way to present the nut to be cracked.
And I think, you know, a number of us have been beating our head around the way of actually doing that. So I think, you know, if you've got ideas on that, then present them to the list, please, because, you know, I think we basically run out of ideas from the people who have been trying to work the conference calls. So present on the list ways that you might think that progress could be made on this subject. Thank you.